George Capanelli here. Welcome to Age Nation Radio Magazine, where people, passion, and purpose meet.
And I'm Alan Huttner. We're your hosts at this place. We're boomers, elders, and engaged members of younger generations come to listen, learn, and participate in creating a lifestyle revolution. In-depth interviews, world-class experts and authors present provocative information, and we do commentaries, sometimes humorous, sometimes informative, and our special features interspersed with some great music and more.
Today, we're going to shift our attention from the world around us to what each of us can do within ourselves and in direct spheres of influence to bring about the kind of positive changes many of us would like to create. Our guests today are Byron Katie and Stephen Mitchell, two people from our perspective who provide all of us with valuable tools to improve our lives and the well-being of the planet.
And as usual, we have music interludes with messages, Tracy Chapman, Paul McCartney, and Sting. Also, our feature today with Dr. Pat Love on love and, hot monogamy.
So welcome to Age Nation Radio Magazine, the place for people who are committed to living consciously and aging wisely in the 21st century. So we've spent the last few shows talking about the world at large, about the economic war that's being waged under the banner of fiscal responsibility, and about some of the threats to democracy and our way of life. Today we're going to continue this conversation, but we're going to shift our attention from the outside to the inside. We're going to talk about some of the things each of us can do to help make the world a better, saner, and more conscious place. We realize that it's easier to talk about what's happening out there, of course, about what we think or believe other people are doing wrong, than to focus on what we're doing. It has, in fact, always been a kind of primary human pastime. To look at the things that we may be doing is more difficult or painful, which, of course, is one of the reasons so many of us avoid it. But hang around with us today, will you? You might just find that some of the things we're going to talk about are a lot easier to do than you imagine, and that the return you'll get by doing them will be more immediate and much more beneficial than you ever thought possible.
Throughout history, wise teachers from all major religions and spiritual practices have reminded us that the real reason we are on the earth is to work on raising our individual consciousness and then to demonstrate this by being better at being human and perhaps enjoying it and being a little joyful in the time. Find the right balance between mind, body, and spirit also involves working on the frailties and limitations that all of us are born with and that many of us compound in our lives. This is the message we've been exposed to in the great books of wisdom, in some of our places of worship, and even in some of our classrooms. Know thyself. Love is the answer. And of course, Matthew's famous caution, what matters if you gain the world and lose yourself? Even with all of this, most of us find plenty of reasons to focus on the outside rather than inside, the inner work. We have all these so-called important, practical, and real things that grab our attention.
Now, let's face it. Some of this is certainly true. We do have to earn a living, fulfill practical responsibilities to our families and friends and our communities. But there's other truths. For example, many of the threats and challenges we face actually come because of the inner limitations and the less than laudable qualities and characteristics we practice, which is why we believe these things deserve our attention. In fact, these limitations and frailties actually make our doing of all the practical things more difficult. They also prevent us from realizing the dreams we've come here to manifest.
What is the inner work? From our perspective, it is the work we can do to understand and master ourselves, our emotions, align our thoughts, words, and actions with our core values or our soul values, and move beyond our emotional wounds and our fears so we can live a life that is a lot more about courage, peace, and there's that L word again, love.
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 Yeah,
let's love. Yeah, come on. What else is there?
Now, fortunately, we happen to be alive at a time when the world is literally flooded with information and techniques on how to do the inner work that Alan's talking about, spiritual and physical disciplines, teachers and guides, bookstores, courses, retreats, seminars, everything at our fingertips. And literally, with a click of a mouse, at least as long as the internet is free and uncensored, we can explore the wisdom that's been accumulated through the ages. Pretty remarkable, don't you think? And yet, even with all of this wisdom and support, many of us still find ourselves living lives that are less than they can be, lives boundaried by limited thought forms and habituated behaviors. So today, we're going to offer you and ourselves a few reminders on how we can turn limited and less than into more of what we want.
Now, here are a few of the things I find helpful, some tips for you. First, and most importantly, is balancing doing and being. You know, I attribute this to Amit Goswami, a physicist who's written often on the quantum field. He says, you got to balance doing and being, like the song, you know, do, be, do, be, do. All right. And by being, I mean knowing and being in the quiet of who you are, and for those periods of quiet time, watching your mind. But don't follow it. What will slowly come to the foreground is pure awareness, or the pure presence of who you are. There are many forms of this quiet time, often referred to as meditation, anywhere from a few minutes to the traditional 20 minutes of transcendental meditation or Dr. Herbert Benson's method of just repeating one heartful, loving word to yourself over and over again for 15 to 20 minutes called the relaxation response. It works. You just need to develop a consistent practice. The other practice I highly endorse is a commonly referred to in the contemporary world as the rites, R-I-T-E-S, not R-I-G-H-T-S, or five Tibetan rites, which you can do anywhere in your house from a 7 to 10 minute period. I've been doing these and teaching these rites for some 17 years now, and as the book written about them, Ancient Secrets of the Fountain of Youth, documents, doing these rites, which are five simple movements and yoga-like postures, can actually retard and reverse the aging process. Look at me, George. What do you think?
I think they work. Do they ever work?
Look at me. Look at me. All right. You too.
All right. So a few things from my side of the coin.
Let me just jump in here for a second, because I know people are going to say, how do I find out more about this? Uh-huh. I suggest you Google the book title, Ancient Secrets of the Fountain of Youth. Google the five Tibetan rites on the internet. You're going to find a lot of material there, and you'll find all the resources you need. Same thing for meditation. Google meditation, and then you can find good teachers and classes for both of these practices if you want to be in a class.
Thanks.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's great. Okay. So I'm going to stress the silence thing. You know, for me, it's learning to listen in the silence, because in a world that's so full of noise and distraction, it's becoming harder and harder to hear the wisdom that each of us has direct access to inside of ourselves. So I believe we need to turn off our computers, our cell phones, our iPods, and our televisions at least long enough and frequently enough to be able to listen in the silence. Reflection, contemplation, as you said, meditation, all great doorways back to the wisdom of the self. And the self, after all, is the thing that we came in with and will go out with. So listening is pretty important. I also suggest that you get comfortable with ambiguity and discomfort. In some ways, we live in what I call the aspirin culture. At the first sign of the slightest discomfort or distress, we look for something to make it go away. Activity, sex, food, drugs, alcohol, entertainment, you name it. Anything to dull or overheat the senses. Anything to prevent us from realizing that we are not the masters of the universe. So my recommendation is, if you want to be successful in the time ahead, get comfortable with discomfort and befriend ambiguity. Lastly, learn the difference between believing and knowing, and this is something that I treasure. Carl Jung, who is someone who is one of my heroes, spent a significant part of his career reminding people of the difference between believing and knowing. Belief is, of course, based on other people's experience. Knowing is based on our own. So if you want to live a life in which you really manifest the gifts that you were born to, each of us really needs to learn the difference between believing and knowing, especially in our world, where so many people who believe spend a lot of time manipulating the rest of us.
You know, and in between that, it's okay sometimes to not know anything,
yes.
You know, and drop your beliefs and not know. This is an expression, empty the cup.
So. Yeah. So these are some of the things that Alan and I suggest and we remind ourselves of, because to contribute effectively and intelligently with the challenges that are out there in our world, we have to first begin dealing with the challenges and the frailties that exist inside of ourselves.
Reclaim your passion. Age Nation Radio.
Alan's featured interview today is with the remarkable Byron Katie and the equally unique Stephen Mitchell, who's her husband. These are two people who know a great deal about how each of us can do the inner work we were born to do.
I believe one of the most difficult things for people in our contemporary culture to accept, as it is aging. Maybe you would just talk about that in general. Any tips about how to go about that in a more conscious way as a reality of life, and don't argue with it, as we said before?
Well, you know, for my part, if I love my thoughts, then I love everything that I see. Mm-hmm. So the trick is to love what we think, and to love what we think, we have to question what people see as negative thinking, to question it, and in other words, to work it, to do the work with it, mm-hmm. until you love everything you think. And I look at my body as I look. I'm looking at my hands now, Alan, and I'm going, it's like, whose hands are they? They're so wrinkled, and they're the hands of a 64-year-old woman who spent her entire youth in a bathing suit on the river water skiing and getting a suntan, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I try to make something ugly with it, and all I see is beauty. Mm-hmm. And I look in the mirror, and there's nothing I can do not to love what I see. Mm-hmm. And that is just how it is, because I have questioned the thoughts that I believe about aging and health and looks. And it doesn't mean I don't wear lipstick. It doesn't mean that I don't see my wrinkles and age. And it doesn't mean my bones aren't beginning to creak. It's just that, do you love it yet?
This is key here. This is such a key thing. I want to read a paragraph out, again, going to the book here, A Thousand Names for Joy. Quote, this is you. I'm happy to be this now 64-year-old woman. I love that I weigh 160 pounds. I love that I'm not any smarter than I am. I love that my skin is getting wrinkled and loose. I love that some mornings I'm almost blind, and there's just a haze of world, and I can barely see where I'm going. I love where my hands have been put, and I love how I am breathed and positioned and angled. I love what I see now as I look out the window, one solid picture, tree, sky, lawn. It goes on and on to all the things that you love. And so this is the key. It really, what it is not even, and maybe you would answer this, but it's not even that you love all these things, that maybe you are the love. It's not about the objects themselves, is it? You are the love. You are in state of vibration of being of that. And maybe you would describe what that state is, if you can.
You've just named it. It's like, because I love, I only see love. Mm-hmm. I cannot see anything else. And I'd like to say I'm open because, mind is ever creative, ever expanding, ever. There's no end to the beautiful, the magnificent, the unlimited, I like to say that when you understand that life is so good that it cannot possibly get any better, it has to. That's the law when you enter the non-dualistic state, meaning the only positive state, a state of love.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about, Stephen brought it up in the conversation just before, and I read it in the book about this, having a gun stuck in your stomach. Was this a real life experience where somebody was going to murder you, kill you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They said. They thought.
They thought.
Yeah, that was just them thinking, though.
Yeah. This is interesting because this is the power of love to me. I don't know what state you were in when that was happening, but as I remember, you didn't panic. You didn't go into fear.
I have no fear of death, and I won't go into that. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want him to do that to him.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, a kind mind, a clear mind is a kind mind, and what's left is how can I help?
Mm-hmm.
Because you no longer need help. Mm-hmm. There's every breath you take is help.
Yeah.
Every ray of the sun is help. The breeze is help. The wind, a hurricane is help. There's nothing that is not support and help.
So there
are people who haven't realized that yet, minds that haven't realized that yet. So I certainly didn't want him to do that to him.
Yeah.
And, you know, I go into prisons and work with people that have murdered, and of course they did. They were believing their thoughts. They had no choice.
I love that story that you told about the man who apparently was on death row or, you know, incarcerated because of a reaction to his wife burning down their house and killing his daughter. And you had a snap with him. He woke up to his joy in some way by you mirroring to him.
It was an amazing experience.
But the thought that provided him with his opening was, I need my daughter to be alive, that little girl who was killed in the fire. And he asked himself, can I absolutely know that that's true? And went deep, and for the first time in 10 years, realized that he was believing a myth. It wasn't true at all. He didn't need her to be alive. And that opened him up to an amazing experience of love for the daughter, love for his wife, love for himself. It was very
truly, truly remarkable. And then when he turned it around, I need to be alive. Oh my goodness! You could just see his knees get weak. You know, it's like he had entombed himself in this. Amazing grace.
Yeah. Well, one last question just around this whole process of aging that relates to being in a state of loving, even facing death, and whether that's one's own death or, as you beautifully wrote about, described in the book, A Thousand Names for Joy, is your time with your mother during her passing and the loss of any loved one. I speak about that to overcome the fear of that, the ultimate expression of our demise as we perceive it.
Are you asking about my experience as my mother was dying?
Yeah, and generically, you know, we all face our own death. You said before, you know, the body's when it goes. So what is your kind of advice about how to get out of the fear of that and live in loving, knowing that, you know, physical...
To understand that mind is not body.
Mm-hmm.
And to question every thought that brings on fear and stress around the physical body, mm-hmm. frees you from that physical body. And in that, the physical body frees up. And you know, I can, you know, my mother, I don't... You know, I still am waiting for some sadness, and it just doesn't come, because every time I think of my mother, it's like a visit. It's like a visit.
Mm-hmm.
My heart opens, and I see her, and I see the two of us together, and I see our lives together, and it's as though she's right here with me, because she is.
Yeah.
And when she was alive, she was in the kitchen, and let's say I was in the bedroom, and I couldn't see her, she couldn't see me, but she was in my mind. So it's no different now than then.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's meant by, you know, when I say no one can leave me, they don't have that power.
Mm-hmm.
No one can die, and because I can't die, they can't die. I am not body, I am mind. And you know, I invite your listeners to consider, you know, it's like you are you only because you believe it. Mm-hmm. And have you ever stopped to question that? And just to work with the thoughts until finally mind and body are not at odds with each other. And you are living in sync without war and fear. You know, it's where the internal war ends and life becomes exciting in every moment.
Okay, I one quick question for Stephen here before we take a final break and come back for another segment that I want to do with the two of you, which I'll explain in a moment. But here's one for you, Stephen. All right, if Lao Tzu, as we talked about, creator of the Tao Te Ching, which you translated, or a collective under the name of Lao Tzu, were alive today in physical form, how might he describe physical aging of the body, of the mind, of a relationship, and the eternal that does not change at all behind that? You know, just throw that one at you.
Well, I think she would have written 1,000 Names for Joy.
That was good. I had nothing to do with that.
That's my guy. That, I gotta tell you.
I love it.
But you know, if you think you're old, then you're living in a past, because for all you know, you were just born in this moment now, and all those images that show you as young or younger or yesterday are just images in your head, you know? It's like living in the moment. You know, here I am with no past, no future, and isn't this a wonderful moment?
No present, don't forget to say that.
Three friends sitting together laughing. I have a cup of tea in my hand. No. The sun is shining.
Let me tell you, some of the greatest joys of my life, and of course I have Elizabeth Rose, who's my partner, who I have deep love with, and that's a great gift. The divine deliverance of a partner that you can spend time with, I think, is beautiful. Not to say that being alone can't be beautiful either, but besides that, it's the times that I get to hang out with people like you over these last 23 years, who have awoken to the deeper nature of self and who can live for the most part in love. And yeah, we all fall down every once in a while, but you know that we hold a vision in our hearts for the reality is the way it is, but what if more people were in love? What would that look like? Mm-hmm. You know, what would that look like?
Well, and also another thought is everyone's in love. They just haven't realized it yet.
Uh-huh. It's hidden somewhere.
It's been obscured by a belief system that hasn't been tested.
Stop waiting. Now's the time. Age Nation Radio. Come back to the revolution. Age Nation Radio.
It's always great talking to two really committed and remarkable people, isn't it? You know?
Well, you know, they're married. Just a little quickie here, because I love Katie and I love Stephen Mitchell. You know, his translation of the Tao Te Ching probably sold close to 1 million copies by now. And that book, 1,000 Names for Joy, is kind of the contemporary version of that. And I said to him, what if the Lao Tzu, who's attributed to writing the Tao Te Ching, was alive today? You know, what would he do? What would he look like? He said he'd be Katie. So that's how much he loves his wife.
Remarkable. Katie's perspective is just mind-boggling sometimes, especially when I listen to her and I think about how many times each day I forget to look out at the world through eyes that see love, you know. Mm-hmm. When I'm wearing the critic hat, or when I'm wearing the doubter's hat, or when I'm wearing, you know, the impatience hat, or any of the other hats that I wear, to be able to come back to that thought, you know, that if you look with love, then everything that you see is love, is extraordinary.
Well, you know, this is where the few masters that walked the planet in the past would assemble large numbers of people around them because they knew how to stay in the love state no matter what was going on around them. So it's the vibration, which she's talking about. She's loving the wrinkle. She has mastered her ability to stay in love. And if I started timing these things in my life with my watch about how much I'm in love and how much I'm somewhere else, I wouldn't like the ratio. So the practice is, it's like bhakti yogi, yoga, stay in your heart.
I also, considering the fact that Age Nation looks at the question of living consciously and aging wisely. And so when she talks about looking at her wrinkles or looking at different parts of her being and accepting them as just part of the wear and tear on the vehicle that we travel through life, and looking at it with curiosity instead of with resistance and all the rest of it. There are so many, many people in our world, clearly, who struggle with their obsession with youth and with their loss of what they think is are so many important things, and yet here's a woman who's contributing so much to people's ability to live lives of greater meaning, and she has such a degree of balance and understanding about the natural process.
You know, I don't know whether she brought it up in that interview, but, you know, just from knowing her and having done a few interviews with her and Stephen, she'll look you in the eye or say to you, you can't argue with reality. It will take you out of love. Yeah. Now, it doesn't mean you accept reality as it is in the sense of changes can't be made. But love it the way it is right now in this moment. Be here now. And then you can say, well, what would I like to see different in reality? But you can't argue with it because you'll be out of love.
And I think, you know, we're not going to talk about what she calls the work today, but I do think that that extraordinary question, the first question that she invites people to ask, and that is it true? If each of us could utilize that question every single moment of our lives, what a different world we would be in, instead of all of the stories that each of us tends to make up in our heads and then live as if that was reality,
You know, my good buddy Ram Dass, in his latest book, which is Be Love Now, a play on Be Here Now plus 40 years, says, look, you know, if you don't like it, or even if you hate it, or you hate someone, love it. And I understand that, you know, stop and just say, I got to love it the way it is. And it will change the whole dynamics of that person. Your relationship with them changes.
Yeah. So we look forward to bringing you more great interviews with people like Byron and Stephen and a whole lot of other folks who make a real difference in our way of life.
Agenation Radio.
And now here's this week's special feature with our good friend Dr. Pat Love.
Distinguished Professor Pat Love with us on the studio line for our feature, Dr. Love on Love. And Pat, always a pleasure to talk with you.
My pleasure to be here.
You're known for hot monogamy. Why don't you just do that one?
Okay.
You'll have to explain that, see?
Right. In fact, one time I was being introduced and someone's, the preacher at the church introduced me and said she's going to talk on hot monotony. I thought that was an interesting slip.
Yeah.
But basically, hot monogamy is not an oxymoron, as a lot of people might think. And monogamy, actually, research shows, has the best atmosphere for creating exciting sex. And as a low desire person myself, I had to learn the benefits of sex. So I think it's important for me to give 5 reasons to have sex when you don't feel like it. One reason is that it really is a normal request in a committed love relationship. And of course, I'm talking 2 consenting adults, mutual respect, non-coercive. And so if you think about it, when you promised to commit, or when you committed to your partner, if you just said, we're never going to have sex again, you know, the person, they probably wouldn't have signed up for it. So you have to ask, if you expect monogamy, then part of that expectation is to meet one another's sexual needs. So two, the second reason is that it feeds a relationship. Oftentimes you can't ask, what do I want, what do you want, but what is best for our relationships? Half the population, by the way, and some of these are men and two-thirds of women, don't feel like having sex until they're already having sex. This is a big misunderstanding, that you really do have to get into it. You know, right, those few moments right before ecstasy, you go, oh, why, we're going to do more often. Why do I resist this? Why don't I, do, you know, you make all these promises.
Isn't that Newton's law?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is. So it feeds the relationship. That's the second reason. Third one is, it promotes bonding. Oxytocin, that triggers orgasm, is a bonding agent. It makes you feel closer. It makes you feel more caring. The fourth reason is that oxytocin is also an amnesic, meaning that for about 4 to 6 hours after sex, you know, when you've had this bonding experience, you forget that he didn't pay the Visa bill. You forget that she forgot your birthday. So it's an amnesic. It sort of wipes the slate clean. And the last reason is it's good for your health. It blows life-giving oxygen to your brain. It lowers your resting heart rate, makes your teeth and bones stronger, makes your hair shiny, makes your skin glow, makes you feel younger. So it's not only good for you, but it's good for your relationship.
Oh, great. Great message today. Well, I'll talk to you next week. And in the meantime, you can go to patlove.com and get a lot more information about that and hot monogamy. Thanks.
Thank you.
Stop waiting. Now's the time. Age Nation Radio.
Time now for our You've Got to Be Kidding segment. You know, each week we bring you some items from the week's news that, from our standpoint at least, demonstrate the fact that the world is really bizarre and confused sometimes.
I thought bizarre was a place you shopped.
It is. So, Paul Krugman, who some of you may or may not know or like from the New York Times, says this week's, what's happening in Texas seems more and more to be where Americans' political future happens. Texas likes to portray itself as a model of small government, and indeed it is. Taxes are low, at least if you're in the upper part of the income distribution. If you're in the bottom 40%, however, it's above national average. Government spending is also low. But here's the thing. While spending is low, and in the abstract sounds good, what it amounts to in practice is that low spending is on children, who account directly or indirectly for a large part of government outlays. And in low-tax, low-spending Texas, the kids aren't doing that well. The high school graduation rate is just 61.3%, puts Texas 43rd out of 50 in state rankings. Nationally, the state ranks fifth in child poverty. It leads in the percentage of children without health insurance. What Krugman does not say about Texas and about America is that the draconian budget cuts that are being effected in most states will also dramatically reduce the quality of life for elders as well. So apparently, America envisioned by conservatives who are calling for these and other cuts does not include the young or the old. America is no longer the land of the free and the home of the brave with liberty and justice for all. No, the America they envision has room only for those who are healthy, wealthy, and self-focused. You gotta be kidding.
Here's another piece of recent news, also from a New York Times op-ed, and it's a quote. The House leaders are demanding ruinous cuts and threatening to close the government doors if they do not get their way. The threat of a shutdown is a serious one. Once the stopgap measure now supplying money to the federal government expires, hundreds of thousands of workers would be furloughed, halting vital services like veterans' health care, passport processing, and possibly slowing the distribution of benefit checks. Essential services would continue, but the impact on a fragile recovery could be devastating. None of that has in the slightest deterred House Republicans from pursuing their single-minded goal of disemboweling the government. They took advantage of the Democrats' failure to pass a budget last year and approved a bill that makes nearly $62 billion in cuts just over the next 7 months. Much of the effort pursued longstanding partisan goals like eliminating programs for disadvantaged minorities rather than real deficit reduction. Is it me Or are these fools on both sides of the aisle playing some kind of game of chicken with our future? Whatever happened to the love? You got to be kidding. What happened to the love? And now here's this week's closing commentary with George, Inside Out, The Real Path to Power.
We're at an interesting crossroads, and some would say critical crossroads, in our history. The battle currently underway between the left and the right over whose philosophy will shape the next chapter in American history is really heating up. Some suggest that what's at stake in this battle is democracy itself, and a way of life that a majority of our citizens have come to accept as a part of our national heritage, and that the world at large has used as a beacon of hope leading to what is possible when human freedom, ingenuity, and passion combine. As this battle rages on, and continues to impact more and more of us, there are those who are calling for us to go out into the streets to protest and demonstrate our solidarity behind those who are trying to protect our rights and prevent the few from solidifying their control over the many. From my perspective, there's more than enough truth in these concerns about the well-being of our democracy and the safety and security of a way of life that has, until recently, provided extraordinary opportunities to people of all races, creeds, and colors, as well as ages, to pursue their dreams while also providing sufficient support and protection for those who are less fortunate, particularly the young, the disadvantaged, and the elderly. I'm also clear that unless we raise our collective voices and reclaim our right to participate actively in determining our own future will indeed be determined for us by people who appear, at least from my perspective, to have lost both their moral and ethical compass, by people whose only desire appears to be to shape this once great nation into a kind of private protectorate in which they can exercise their own biases, enforce their limited beliefs, and to accumulate more and more political power and a greater and more disproportionate share of the financial wealth. Not a pretty picture, at least from my point of view. However, what is also clear to me is that if those of us who do not want to see democracy end, and who do not want to live under the rule of the few, do not turn inward to listen and respond to the wisdom that issues from our hearts, and that speaks the language of greater consciousness, all of the protesting in the world will accomplish little. Yes, if we are to be successful in returning this nation to a path of sanity and stability, we must remember that life is an inside-out job, and our first responsibility is to identify and clear up those places within us that are bounded by limited beliefs and captured in habituated behaviors. Do this, and then what we do out in the world will actually work. Do this work of raising our consciousness. Have the courage to go to those places inside us where prejudice hides, where fear of the other and the unknown is present. Heal our emotional wounding that blinds us and prevents us from expressing our compassion, empathy, and above all, if we remember that each and every one of us who is part of this thing called humanity, we're in it together, and then watch what happens. It may take a little more time and provide those of us who are intent on rewriting our Constitution and subverting the will of our founders more opportunity to advance their intent. But in the end, I believe those of us who favor a higher consciousness will be successful. For I believe that the power of one, especially when that power is exercised from the inside out with integrity as well as intellectual honesty, especially when it is guided by that inner wisdom that speaks from the heart, not just from the head, especially when it is aligned with decency, calls for collaboration and speaks with compassion and love, will in the end prove to be much stronger and much durable than any of the ideas advanced by those who would enslave us.
Thanks, George. Nice words. Next week, we continue to look at some of the things we can do to help facilitate the shift from scarcity and fear to abundance and peace. As always, we are interested in your comments about the show and any topics you are interested in having us explore. You can send your recommendations to us at info@agenation.com. Find out more about Age Nation online at agenation.com and sign up for our free offers. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
Elizabeth Rose here, co-producer of the thought-provoking and life-enhancing TransitionsTeleseminars.com series, inviting you to listen to prominent guests conversing on love, spirituality, money, sexuality, and the mystical. This series is hosted by your Age Nation Radio Magazine co-host, Alan Huttner, and his good friend, Bill O'Hanlon, psychotherapist, best-selling author, and featured Oprah guest. Guest presenters include Marianne Williamson, Andrew Harvey, Joan Borisenko, Bruce Lipton, Larry Dossey, Harville Hendricks, and many more. A lot of great content available, MP3 audio downloads, PDF transcripts, CEU credits, and free conversations with bonus materials. Go to www.transitionsteleseminars.com for more information.
Over 40 and looking for answers to the challenges and remarkable opportunities ahead. Are you under 40 and want to know more about the world you'll soon inherit? Then Do Not Go Quietly is the perfect book for you. Inspiring, empowering, full of practical guidance, this best-selling book has already won 3 2013 book awards. It is a powerful call to action and to a life of genuine purpose for those who weren't born yesterday. Wise woman Jean Houston says it's profound, compassionate, and deeply useful. So live the life you were born to live, and remember, you're never too old or too young to live your dreams. Available on Amazon.com, at Barnes & Noble, and bookstores everywhere. For free downloads, interviews, and a lot more, visit donotgoquietlythebook.com.
Harvest the Wisdom, Age Nation Radio.